The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. It's Glenn and Stu. And today is Tuesday, September 18th. Stu, this is the day the book was released.
I had totally forgotten about it.
We barely even mentioned it in this podcast. You probably won't even notice the 100 times we mentioned it. Go out and buy the book. The first part of the podcast, we really talk about Kavanaugh. And I try to show you how we can get outraged and we could yell at each other and call each other names, or we can start using logic and reason. And I break down what civil law, you know, a criminal law, and our social laws mean. They all come from the same place, and how to look at this and how to win this argument. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about the postmodern progressive playbook, that there is no reason at all. However, in that, we tried to take a look at the story from, where is it, Albuquerque? It's someplace in New Mexico where they have the sun, the solar, telescope.
The solar spot observatory that just got evacuated randomly.
Right, but with Black Hawk helicopter.
Right.
And they haven't said anything on what it is, and speculation online is, well, those are aliens, they got aliens, or, you know, sunspots, and it's going to knock all the communication out, we'll be dead in a week. They came out with an explanation, and it was trying to make us feel better. And did you feel better?
No, I felt worse.
I didn't really feel better at all. Also, how do you predict if a person is white? The algorithms now have us nailed. You won't believe what some of the differences are that separate us from liberal, conservative, white, black. It's bizarre.
Some of it really surprised me.
Yeah.
Before we get there, first, our sponsor for today's podcast is something really cool you're going to want to listen to maybe when you're done with this podcast. American Scandal. It's a new podcast from Wondery, and it is a really cool thing. Looking back at historical scandals, how they go, how all the twists and turns, why they started, what we learned from them, and kind of going back and seeing the corruption and the deceit and all of the things to bring down these huge figures, how it, you know, the play-by-play and kind of bringing you back into those moments. And they do a really good job of bringing you through these scandals.
I just listened to another show from Wondery called Dr. Death, which is really, really good. I mean, these guys know how to do podcasts and tell stories. American Scandal.
Yeah, the first story is a look inside America's pastime, baseball. Go subscribe to American Scandal on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to, wherever you're listening to this, you can just subscribe. Or head to wondery.fm/Beck, wondery.fm/Beck. It's American Scandal on Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this, wondery.fm/Beck. You're going to love it.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Tuesday, September 18th.
Well, this kind of escalated quickly, didn't it? In 4 days, Christine Ford went from an anonymous letter writer to willing to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Probably the most talked about person in 4 days. Probably the most talked about person in America yesterday. Now, what a surprise, she's a professor from a university in California, who says that the Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, sexually assaulted her at a high school party in 1982. I want to be really, really clear. I don't want to discredit her. I don't want to make a judgment on her or anything else. I want to set the record straight as we know it. She's made a serious accusation, which Kavanaugh unequivocally denies. He said in a statement yesterday, "I have never done anything like what the accuser describes to her or anyone. Because this never happened, I have no idea who is making this accusation until she identified herself yesterday." Kavanaugh said he's more than willing to talk to the Senate Judiciary Committee, even though he's already spent 4 marathon days in the hot seat, where Democrats had every opportunity to grill him, but they failed to do so. Now, Christine Ford's lawyer says Ford is also willing to do whatever it takes to get her story forth. To get her story forth. Is that your goal, to get your story out, or is your goal to find justice? Interesting. She said she's willing to do it no matter what, even if it means testifying before the committee. Democrats, of course, are also willing to do whatever it takes to tell her story, which is probably why we were hearing it in the first place. Ford's lawyer, Deborah Katz, escalated the rhetoric yesterday, calling Kavanaugh's alleged assault attempted rape. Katz seems very convinced of Ford's story. But she wasn't as convinced by one of Bill Clinton's accusers in 1990. Katz told the New York Times in 1998 that she didn't think Paula Jones had a case. She also accused Al Franken's alleged misbehavior because he wasn't a senator at the time of the incident. So it's really interesting. You know, one woman can cry, you know, sexual harassment from a senator, and she didn't have a problem with it. It's interesting. In the Me Too movement, it's kind of a one-way street sometimes. Thus, postmodernism. For now, Judiciary Committee Chairperson Senator Chuck Grassley says the committee's vote on Kavanaugh will go through this Thursday, but not if Senate Democrats can help it. They were out in force yesterday calling for a delay to the vote, at least until they have full control of Congress. You know, desperate times, desperate measures.
It's Tuesday, September 18th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, welcome to the program. Today is September 18th. This is the day that in ways I have dreaded. It's weird because I've worked so hard on this book, and today it is released out in the public, and everyone can read it, and I'm very excited about it. And at the same time, I'm sitting here kind of like, you know, if you've ever watched the Great British Bake Show or Bake Off or whatever that is, when Paul Hollywood is eating something and then he's like, and you can't tell if he likes it or not. I kind of feel like that today. I urge you to go out today.
Oh, and me too.
And grab it.
Yeah, definitely grab it. Because, you know, today's the big day. It's a day we find out if this thing sells like four copies. You've poured your soul into it for like years. Is this going to be a total failure? We don't know. We're going to know today, though. I can't wait to see.
Okay. All right. That's not really.
Oh, yeah. I'll be watching your reactions.
Okay. All right, thank you, Stu, for the... Okay, the reason why I bring that up here is because that is the search for our unum. In the book, I talk about... There's a section where I think it's seven questions that we have to ask ourselves. And it boils down to, is this thing worth saving? Is the Western way of life worth saving? And you have to answer these questions yourself. And if you answer them honestly, you will be able to answer the last question. So is it worth saving? If it is, we have to pay attention and we have to find our unum. Now, our slogan as a nation has always been E Pluribus Unum. Let me take the Brett Kavanaugh thing and put this together. What is our unum? What is it that brought people together? What is it that brought people from all over the world to come here? Was it capitalism? No. Was it the, you know, streets that were paved in gold? No, they don't exist. What was it? It was the idea that this is a place that believes in the individual, and the Statue of Liberty represents that brazen giant that is going to stand there as a beacon and protect you from the people who want to keep you down. In America, we have the rule of law. Now, have we always done the rule of law? No. Look at Jim Crow laws. It's slavery as we were trying to abolish it. So, no, we haven't always lived up to that. But that has been our ideal. So we were a group of people that said, you know, there's a certain way to live your life. And they happen to find that in the Judeo-Christian laws and writings. The life of Christ, the teachings of Moses, that's what we set ourselves up for. So now you're writing a law. What is that law based on? On what society says is right and wrong. and you're just codifying what you believe is fair and just. Now, I'm setting this up this way because I'm going to talk to you about the law here with Brett Kavanaugh. And I know people want to say, well, that's the law. We don't have that standard. Yes, we do. The standard of the law is our societal belief of what of how things should happen and what's fair and what's just, codified. It came from us. It's not this thing that's just floating out there. Well, that has nothing to do with me. No, our whole society is supposed to be that way. And we've written it down to make sure it is that way in a court of law. So here's the story with Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh is, he's gone through his hearing. A woman decides she wants to come out with charges. Let's not judge it for right now. Let's say she actually believes this happened and Brett Kavanaugh actually believes it didn't happen. Who do we believe? Well, she had a lie detector test. Well, a lie detector test is not scientific. There are ways to beat lie detector tests. And in the case of memories, especially one that's 34 years old, you can actually believe that this has happened. But that doesn't mean it did happen. All right. She comes forward and she says, I can't remember where I was. I can't remember what year it was. I think it was in the summer. I don't remember the house. I don't remember how I got there. I don't remember anyone that was involved, but I do remember Brett Kavanaugh. I do remember that he put his hand over my mouth and he tried to grope me over my clothes. I believe he was trying to rape me. I believe he was trying to rape me. Another person was there that I can't identify. She tells years later, 2012, she tells her doctor, her psychiatrist, about this. And she says, according to the psychiatrist, that there were four guys involved, which is different than what she's saying now. She says that the psychiatrist got that wrong. Okay, hang on. Which one do we believe? Do we believe her or do we believe the psychiatrist? Because both are being presented as people who are credible witnesses. Did the psychiatrist get it wrong? Because two sounds an awful lot like four. Or did she get it wrong? We don't know. But you have to decide that she is more credible than the credible doctor she is trying to hold up and say, look, I told him about this. Okay. So you have one person who is a chain in this story from 2012. She also has come forward and said, I also told my husband. Okay, so now you've got her husband.
We should also point out that in to the husband and also to the therapist, the name Kavanaugh was not included. It just said someone from an elite school.
Correct.
So that's another part of this that's important.
Right, and the only one she knows is Brett Kavanaugh.
No, she knew the other guy, too.
Oh,
and
she
named him, and that person also has denied it.
Right, and all of their friends denied it on...
Yes, 65 people that knew
65
them from the
so that's not who they are. Okay. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. So now that's what we have. Now, on Monday, they're both going to testify in front of Congress. And let's just say she believes that it happened. And he says, and he believes it didn't happen. Who do we believe? Do we believe the girl, the woman? Because why? She's a woman. Isn't that kind of talking down to women? Oh, well, she's a cute little woman and they're always so hurt and she might have been hurt. No. Equal justice. Now, if you want to get into social justice, which is now postmodernism, okay, well, then that you have your decision. She is somebody who has been oppressed. She's an oppressed class. He is a cisgender male. So, no, we don't listen to the white man. We listen to the woman. Is that our social contract with each other? So let me take a break, and I'm going to tell you exactly how to judge this, How do we figure out what's really going on logically, reasonably, without anyone being outraged, without having to engage in any of that? Because the minute we get angry about it, the minute we start tweeting and getting angry because we feel our back is up against the wall, we add to the chaos that is the goal of the postmodern professor. We add to the chaos, which just helps decay our society and the Western way of life. So we mustn't do that. What we must do is use logic and reason and do not go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. I'll show you how this works. This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. And don't forget, rate us on iTunes. If you're a longtime listener to the program, you know that I'm a big fan of Orson Welles. In fact, Orson Welles is the reason, one of the reasons why I wanted to do my job. I started listening to him and others, not just War of the Worlds, but you know, The Shadow, which he played. Because radio can be so descriptive, and it's a partnership. It's a partnership between me and you. As I describe things to you, you can see them. You can smell them. They become real because you're using your imagination. You're not just using me. You're partnering with me and creating these images in your head. I love that. People just think that, oh, you know, people back in 1929, they were old-timey. And they thought, you know, Martians were coming and they were going to, you know, destroy the world. How could they be so stupid? Well, if you actually know, actually it's 1929, it's 1939. If you actually know what was happening in America at the time and why that story was selected by Welles to be a broadcast, it was because we had heard of aliens coming here to destroy us, Germans. That were coming from a far distant land, and they were going to destroy us with all of these super weapons that they were building. So when people heard an invasion, when they heard super weapons and heat rays and everything else, that was already in their psyche. And so it didn't take a lot to push people into hysteria, because they didn't know what was true. They didn't know what wasn't true. They trusted people more than we trust people now. And so it became real to them. Let me talk to you about aliens for a second. How many of us 20 years ago would have been shocked if all of a sudden the government came out and said, oh, by the way, there's alien life, and I don't mean it's like it living in a rock on Mars. I mean it's got four legs, 16 eyes, and we've had a couple of visitors in the Oval Office. How many of us would have been, wait, what? And your world would fall apart. Today, if you said, and it's got 16 eyes, you'd be like, oh, Bernie Sanders? No, I mean real aliens have been in the Oval Office. Oh, what'd they say? Right? Would your world fall apart if you found out that aliens were real? Mine wouldn't. But yours, Stu? You think most people's world would fall? I mean, yes, there would be panic because the news would be like, ah, aliens!
Well, but they do that about everything. So yeah, there's no longer... We're so constantly on alert for every huge problem. Every little problem turns into a huge one, so...
I think there would be people that would be like, oh... Did they bring their vaporizing gun? Because, oh, I'm tired of this.
I mean, you know? Get to the point where you're almost praying for destruction.
Okay. So let me tell you now. I'm going to read to you the story about the closing of the Sunspot Solar Observatory. Now, this is from a credible source. It's from the Kansas City Star. They reported on it. And they're basically saying, you know, there's not aliens, and we're pretty sure there's not sunspots that are going to knock us all back to the Stone Age. Let me read this. The group that manages the facility announced on the observatory's Facebook page Sunday that it had been cooperating with an ongoing law enforcement investigation of criminal activity that occurred at Sacramento Peak. That's where the observatory is. Now, remember what this story is. is that Black Hawk helicopters and the FBI shut this observatory down, told everybody you have to leave and you have to leave right now. Get out of your desk and leave. People who were asked to leave, actually, I thought it was the FBI, but it wasn't. It was the people that were asked to leave called the sheriff and said to the sheriff, we're being asked to leave. I don't know why, but can you guys come and just watch this and observe? Because they're not giving us any answers. So it was the people that were being asked at the observatory to leave that were very uncomfortable with this. Now, the next question is, what does it take to get the Black Hawk helicopter keys thrown your way? I mean, it's not like, hey, there's something happening up at the observatory. Can we just take the Black Hawk? It's a lot faster. That doesn't happen. Not in U.S. airspace. A Black Hawk helicopter comes and supports the FBI? I don't know if you know this, but the FBI doesn't have the keys to one of those. So we know that Black Hawk helicopter, at least one, accompanied the FBI. They told everybody to leave. Now, law enforcement saying is they were cooperating with an ongoing law enforcement investigation of criminal activity that occurred at Sacramento Peak. What kind of criminal activity would that have to be? During that time, said the statement from the Association of Universities for Research in Astronomy, we became concerned that a suspect in the investigation potentially posed a threat to the safety of local staff and residents. For this reason, we temporarily vacated the facility and ceased science activities at this location. Okay, so somebody was investigating there. Officials have said very little about why the observatory near Alamogordo, I guess, Alamogordo, was shut down. Local law enforcement officials say the FBI was involved in the closure, which the feds have not confirmed or denied. It was our decision to evacuate the facility. This is the scientist. We made the decision to evacuate the facility. I'm actually not sure when the facility was vacated, but it will stay vacated until further notice. According to the newspaper, Benny House, the sheriff of the county, said the FBI was involved in what he described as an elaborate shutdown process and said the FBI is refusing to tell us what is going on. There was a Black Hawk helicopter, I'm still quoting, a bunch of people around antennas and work crews on towers, but no one would tell us anything. Okay, now this goes to a theory that is out and seems reasonable, that somebody was possibly working for the Russians, or this case, the main theory is the Chinese, and they use those antennas and the infrastructure to hack into our governmental systems and be able to ride on the backbone and be able to thwart some of our government systems. That makes sense here, and that would explain a Black Hawk helicopter and everything else, I think. He told the Albuquerque Journal his department got a call from folks that work at the laboratory asking if we could send a deputy to stand by while they were evacuating. The CNET noted that the U.S. military built the observatory in 1947 when it realized the sun could interfere with radio communications. The National Science Foundation ran the facility until the 1960s. Until this year, when operation was transferred to ORA and the New Mexico State University. The statement from ORA on Sunday said the observatory was closed, quote, based on the logistical challenges associated with protecting personnel at such a remote location, okay, and the need for expeditious response from the potential threat. What threat? ORA determined that moving the small number of on-site staff and residents off of the mountain was the most prudent and effective action to ensure their safety. The statement did not explain the criminal activity allegedly discovered at the observatory or mention anything about arrests. It did acknowledge how the lack of communication with the facility was vacated, and it was concerning and frustrating for some. However, quoting, our desire to provide additional information had to be balanced against the risk that if spread at the time, the news would alert the suspect and impede law enforcement investigation. That risk was one we could not take, said the statement. Well, I think the Black Hawk helicopter might have alerted him, too. The observatory's quoting, the observatory's staff of about 9 employees should be back at work this week. and it shouldn't take long for nearby residents to be back in their home. Wait, you not only the facility, but you told everybody that lives nearby they needed to leave their home too? What kind of danger are we talking about?
This is so weird.
This is bizarre.
It's a weird story. You know, it's a lot of times a weird story like this winds up in 3 weeks without fanfare to have some sort of
that's what they want you to believe.
Right. Some sort of description that makes it a lot more boring. Right?
Yes.
I mean, this happens often and you'll find out, okay, well, that kind of makes sense and it wasn't a big deal. Now, of course, the conspiracy theorists, and who knows, maybe they're right this time, would say, well, they just, you know, they're just trying to hide it. And maybe that's, you know, who knows. But this one, I can't even come up with the legitimate, like, explanation that makes me think it's not something really bad. Right? Like, there's not an obvious, to me at least, explanation where it's like, oh, well, yeah, they really big roach problem. You know, I mean, it was just like, everywhere. And there's crunch, crunch, crunch everywhere you walk. Just evacuate the place.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, there's not that.
No.
You don't call in a black hawk for that.
Right.
Unless they're really big bugs.
Right. And I don't think it's, you remember that giant marshmallow man? He's back.
Right.
I don't think it's that either.
No.
I think it is probably something to do with hacking. White Sands is right there. So it's not far from White Sands. But again, I go back to the keys of a Black Hawk. That's not something you just take out for a spin over U.S. In U.S. airspace involved in an operation. Training, sure. Not involved with the FBI. And what kind of threat that was possibly working there were they not trying to tip off? But they come with a Black Hawk. And what kind of threat could pose a danger to everyone on the mountain? It's just bizarre. I just don't, I don't even think I need to say this. Something's not right. But I will tell you this. I'm actually hoping for the alien thing.
Really?
Yes, I am. Because don't you think there is a better chance? Let me ask you. Two scenarios. One. All of a sudden, everybody in Washington starts to make sense. Everybody's like, you know, oh, my gosh, where have I been? I'm sorry. I don't know. I must have been drinking or I had, you know, some of those Roseanne sleeping pills. And I just been crazy for a while.
Right.
I don't know what happened. Okay. And they start to make sense. Is that more likely than aliens invade and they say, people of Earth, we've been observing you, and you're beginning to think that mathematics is racist. We're here to control your planet, because mathematics and science is not racist.
An alien dictatorship to get rid of our nonsense.
That just says, look, we're just here because we haven't lost common sense. It's what built this ship, and we think you need some help. I think there's a better chance that friendly aliens come that are rooted in common sense than anyone in Washington finding it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
Cake bakers, quarterbacks, dresses, statues. Much of America is getting outraged for outrage's sake. And with all of the nonstop outrage coverage, we're actually missing out on the stuff we should be outraged about. It's time to put the bottle down and end our bender. In my new book, Addicted to Outrage, I talk about how thinking like an addict or a recovering alcoholic can actually help heal the country.
Addicted to Outrage, on sale now wherever books are sold.
I want to give you a story here about the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. There's a couple of economists up there, and they have taught machines to guess a person's income, political ideology, race, education, and gender based on either their media habits, their consumer behavior, or their social and political beliefs, even how they spend time.
Okay, so this is like one of these algorithms you see on social networks, right? Where you could say they're taking all of your information, the things you buy, the things you do, and trying to figure out maybe what your political leanings are or other characteristics about you.
Correct. Now, they just tested this, and they've omitted variables that would have been a dead giveaway. For instance, if, you know, we're predicting whether somebody's liberal or conservative, you can't use the question, oh, what party did you vote for?
Right. Okay.
Okay. All right. Now, some of the things are obvious, and some of them aren't, okay? Spending predicts gender, they say, with almost perfect accuracy. Now, that's amazing. Now, it's not on something, I mean, like, when's the last time
we're at a time where our genitals don't predict it with perfect certainty, but
right.
Our spending habits can?
Yes.
Okay.
They're saying that women will buy aftershave or shaving lotion, but not as much as a man will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's kind of a little dicey there. But men rarely go out and buy mascara.
Okay, well, that's...
Yeah. Okay, yeah, all right.
Again, rarely.
Rarely.
You're not being judgmental, I know, when you say that.
Oh, no, men who buy mascara, I think they're very manly, and if they want to be manly, or very feminine if they want to be... You know, the whole thing is fluid, Stu.
All makeup ability is equal.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. In the world of television, some of the top 10 predictors of whiteness. If you are white, top 10 screams you're white. Number one?
That's not how you do a countdown. You're doing a countdown, you're starting at number one? Come on, Casey.
All right. One, two, three, four. Number four.
Okay.
The Kentucky Derby.
Okay, horse racing, I would say,
maybe a
whitish sport.
Right, okay, all right. Number three, the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, okay, I mean, I can see that,
maybe.
I guess, yeah.
American Pickers, number two.
Hmm, interesting. People, that's a
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I wouldn't... You know, there's certain shows that obviously target certain communities, right? I don't know that American Pickers targets white people, but I wouldn't say its target is another. It's not like
it's just Americans. Maybe not even that. It's just, you know, the American culture, and maybe that's what it is. Maybe, you know, we look back on you know, our childhoods and things with fondness in culture. You know, when they find an old sign of something, we're like, oh, that's cool. I'm not sure that's the same for the African-American community.
Sure.
You know, so maybe that's what it is. Number one, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
What?
Did you watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? That's the number one predictor on television. Well, it's because you're white.
Is it because I'm white?
It's because you're white.
I mean, I would say it was because...
What's the snowman? He's white. Santa, he's white.
Well, so is the abominable snowman, however.
This is an entirely white story.
Well, most at the beginning, at least.
Well, excuse me.
Spoiler alert.
Abominable...
Spoiler alert, he turns around in that one.
You know, the monster is the best part of that story. I think Santa's a bigger monster than...
Oh, Santa's a jerk in that thing.
I'm beginning to hate that thing. I watch it because, but every time I watch it, I look at my wife and I'm like... How was this ever cool? How was this ever good?
I love it. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but that is a weird part of it. Santa is portrayed in that movie differently than in every other movie about Santa Claus, right? I mean, he's such a jerk to Rudolph. He's a jerk to his dad. I mean,
his dad. Oh,
Blitzener, whatever it is.
Whatever.
Like, you know, very, when he finds out, hey, your kid's got something a little bit different than him, you should be ashamed of yourself is not the way you handle
that
situation,
right.
Santa.
Right.
And then
when he goes to the elf practice, I mean, here these guys, they're just singing for him. That's all they're doing is singing for him. And he's like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He's a bad boss. He's wildly politically incorrect on all the things that I think you should be politically correct on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's be decent to each other. Oh, he's got a red nose. He's a leper. Put him on a colony. You know, I mean, that's crazy.
Really
Send
is.
Him to an island. Anyway.
And he's not sure. Well, look, everyone has a bad day. And maybe he had a couple bad weeks. You know, he wasn't going to be able to. Christmas was almost canceled, right? He had a lot of stress going on at the time. Maybe give him a break. Certainly, the rest of his body of work is positive.
I would like to see. I'd like to see Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the pivot point. I'd like to see the Santa pivot point.
Well, the Santa pivot point is clear.
I'd like
the Santa pivot point is once he's a utility to Santa. Once Rudolph can do something for Santa, all of a sudden he's won over by him.
I know. I know. I hate that.
I remember the guy, you know, Rudolph is flying better than all of the other reindeer at this time when they're young. They're doing the reindeer games. He's the one kicking butt. And because his nose is a little different, he gets tossed off to some island with a bunch of misfit toys. It's not right. It's not right. And look, you know, we can look back at history and hold this against him forever. I think the statute of limitations probably run out on this case as well.
I don't know. Santa, there's a woman that's come out on Santa.
Oh, no.
Yeah, when Santa was in high school.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What did he do?
He raped her. Full-on okay, rape.
All right.
Well, he was young. He was athletic. He was.
Oh, okay.
This is before he started to drink and get fat and everything else. He was a football player, and he just out-and-out raped her.
Okay.
This is sad. Remember the little dolly?
We've left cute analysis of TV specialville.
That was her.
And we've entered into creepyville.
I swear to you, Dolly was raped by that fat man, and I know because I'm a Charlie in the box.
Right.
All right, I'm just saying. All right, so now here are the top 10 items. Let me get to this first. So this will tell you if you're white on consumer products.
Okay.
Okay? You own a pet is number one. That's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. If you watched that and you watched it with your pet, you are the whitest white man alive.
That's interesting. Wait. So minorities don't own pets? Is there a difference in minority
I would
pet
like
ownership
to hear
rates?
From, I'd like to. Hmm. Can you look it
I'm
up?
I'm going for it.
Now, I don't know if this is true or if this was a joke on me. But I had a Jewish friend come over to my house, and I have two German shepherds. And he wasn't happy about that. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, it's probably pretty bad. And I've heard from him, so this is only just him. But he said, yeah, Jewish people don't usually have dogs. We don't like dogs. Now, I don't know if that's from the Holocaust or, you know, from I don't know when, but he said we don't usually have pets.
This is... I would say pretty revealing. The pet ownership rates, this is at 2011, the most recently available number, by race, ethnicity. Black, 22% own pets. Asian, 27%. Hispanic, 40% own pets. White, 61%.
We just can't
give up. It is a white
up.
Thing, isn't it?
We cannot give up that slave thing. Like, we have to release
really
our people. I'm getting a dog. Then I'm getting a dog, and I'm going to put a chain around his neck, okay?
Wow.
That's what it is.
That's deep.
Nailed it there.
Wow.
I think I nailed it there. That will be taught in universities all across America within the next 10 days.
I would not be surprised at all if there's a liberal professor who's done that exact rant in front of a class.
I can guarantee you.
Why do you think it's three times as high for whites? Because they see these pets as slaves. They can boss them around. They can put them in cages. They can feed them whenever they want. They can throw them outside in the heat.
In the white jeans. Mm-hmm. That's all it is.
God, that's definitely... You're going to see that on Huffington Post in about a week.
I think I might have read it about 10 minutes ago on the Huffington Post.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
So today is the day the book Addicted to Outrage comes out, and I urge you to get it and get one for a friend of yours that you think, you know, may not even like me, but, you know, is open because they know this is not going to work. And share it and read it together. I wrote the book so it can be disarming enough to, you know, appeal to everybody except, you know, probably the hardcore zealot who is just playing for, you know, Team Marks or whatever. And a lot of people have misconstrued what I have been leading to, which is this book, as surrender. But I wanted to have somebody on that is the quintessential example of what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is changing the way we make our arguments, basing them in reason and fact, and finding a way that will appeal to the most amount of people. Prager University is that example. Prager University, there's no hyperbole there. There's no craziness. There's no name calling. You don't get angry. Now, the left does, but that's because they've disconnected from reality. But the average person who will watch that, and it's making an impact. Dennis Prager is with us now. Dennis, are you guys up to a billion views yet? Is Dennis there?
Great question. You don't hear me?
Yeah, I do now. Yeah.
Hello?
Yes, okay, you're on, Dennis.
Okay. First of all, it was a beautiful introduction, and I wish you would have continued, because I'm just reveling in your praise. So, coming from you, it's a big deal. But anyway, we're well beyond a billion views collectively. This year, we'll have a billion views. We're now, I think, at about 700 million for this year.
That's incredible. And when you started this, Dennis, did you have any idea it would be this big?
Glenn, I give you my word. When we started it, if somebody would have said, you will have 10 million views within 5 years, I would have said, give me a break. Come on. I live in reality. I wrote a chapter in my book on happiness about not having expectations. Give me a break.
Right. So what is the – so why does it work, Dennis? Why does it work,
well,
do you think?
It actually – you actually did summarize it. If you give good ideas in a totally accessible and rational, I am in love with reason. Reason is not enough to make a good world. You need God and reason. God without reason is fanaticism. Reason without God ultimately doesn't work. So the two are needed for a good world. My preoccupation since high school is goodness. It sounds corny. I admit it, but it's just true. That's all. I hate evil. My favorite biblical verse is, those of you who love God must hate evil. I wish every priest, minister, and rabbi quoted it every Saturday or Sunday. But if you make it, just as you said, there's no name calling here. Dear viewer, are the facts in the most rational and entertaining way we can present it. It apparently is phenomenal. And my other belief is that it's universal. I was invited by young people in Romania to speak this summer, and I went to Romania. Mm-hmm. 1,500 people, mostly young people, who knew English. There was no translator. Came to hear me in two Romanian cities, Bucharest and Cluj, and only because they view these videos.
When you, I mean, you just turned 70. Happy birthday!
You were
appointed by Reagan for the Helsinki Accords. You were there for that. You've seen
That's
the
right.
world. You've seen the world on the brink of launching missiles. I mean, I remember that time, Dennis. I wasn't around in the administration, but outside of the administration, it sure felt like we were close to something either really good or really bad. Now it just feels like we're really close to something really bad. Would you compare the times? I mean, in your 70 years of life, where does this fall, what we're experiencing now? What can you compare it to any other time?
I think that the crisis in America is the greatest in my lifetime and the greatest since the actual Civil War. I never engage in hyperbole. I may, like anyone, be wrong. But I took a vow 35 years ago when I started radio that I not only would I try to tell the truth, and I've never been accused of a lie, I am proud to tell you. I've been called every word but not liar. And I took another vow. Don't even exaggerate, because it works for about a year, mm-hmm. but it gradually people understand, well, he doesn't really mean that. He's just overstating the case. So I am not overstating when I say we are in a civil war in the United States. It is largely, thank God, not violent. I pray it remains not violent. But there, the gap between the left and the rest of the country is tremendous. I mean, that it is now normative, I mean normative, in schools not to call children boys or girls because you don't want to impose a gender identity.
It is
sick to the point of child abuse, but it is normative. We are watching crazy people take our country.
So this is the interesting thing, Dennis, that I write about in the book, and I don't think the average person understands this. They look at the average Democrat as the problem. The average Democrat is not the one coming up with the cisgender normative speak. It is the postmodernist Marxist radicals that are really in the institutions of higher education that have formulated this whole system, and now they're just rolling it out, and the Democrats are just going along with it. I think some of them are starting to be a little freaked out by it, but it's the postmodernist movement that is all about destruction of the Western way of life. There's no cohabitation here with that philosophy.
Yeah, the problem, however, is that the people who don't really believe in it among Democrats, let's say, don't fight it. Because,
correct,
and this is the tragedy, liberals, with the exception of a guy like Alan Dershowitz, liberals don't understand that their enemy is not conservatives, their enemy is the left. Conservatives do not want to undo the liberal order. The left wants to undo the liberal order.
Yes. Oh, you mean classic liberal when you say that?
Yes. No. Yes. Even the modern liberal. I mean, Alan Dershowitz is, I don't know if he's a classic liberal or a modern liberal. Alan Dershowitz, professor of law at Harvard, lifelong Democrat, Hillary Clinton supporter, said to me, it is on film, not only on audio, said to me, Dennis, as an American, as a liberal, as a Jew, I don't fear the right. I fear the left.
Dennis, I have had people, I had dinner last night with somebody that would shock you, and privately said exactly the same thing and is wondering how to present this so he's not just destroyed by his own friends and his own side. I mean, there are people that are coming out. I've had people tell me this over and over again. I'm more afraid of our side than your side now because my side's unleashed. They're just all standards are changing overnight, and you have to adopt 100% or you're destroyed.
Well, that's right, because all leftism is totalitarian. There's never been an exception. You are either totally with us, or if you deviate, you need to go to a re-education camp. We allow people who deviate among conservatives. Our
yes.
tent is gigantic. Their tent is if you say there are only two genders, you're a bigot. That's the end of the issue. So do you know that there are girls, teenage girls, I mean, and even in the early teenage years, who have their breasts removed because they think they're boys?
I think this is...
Child abuse. Why is that not mutilation?
It
totally.
Is.
Totally.
It is. When you turn 18, you know, you do what you want. I mean, whatever. When you are... Before you have settled, and I don't even know if 18 is young enough to mutilate your body like that. I mean, studies are showing now that already... Some of these kids who are doing this, the suicide rate's going through the roof because they're changing. That's what they feel at 13. That's not what they feel at 18.
Right.
Changing.
Johns Hopkins University was the leader in sex change surgery, and they abandoned it. They eventually abandoned it.
And Johns Hopkins University.
Go ahead.
Now, the Johns Hopkins University was is the progressive hospital. It was built based on, you know, all of the universities over in Germany. They were the first one that brought all of this stuff over here. It's Johns Hopkins University. It's a progressive university that is as hard left in its origins as you can possibly get.
I didn't know about its origins. I've certainly known that it's on the left, but it's almost redundant with regard to any university today.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, I wish it were only confined to universities. When President Trump said in Warsaw that we need to protect Western civilization, he was attacked by the New York Times editorial board.
I know.
See, these people don't just dominate the universities and now the high schools. They also dominate the media.
I'm more concerned about the new media, Dennis, on what they're doing to people like you. How many videos have been banned from Prager University?
Well, that's another story. It's actually restricted. In other words, YouTube, owned by Google, has taken about 80 of our 340 videos. They're all 5-minute videos, just for your listeners who don't know. And they come out every week.
Have you found a pattern in the ones that have been banned or restricted? Have you found a pattern?
There are two patterns. One is here are almost guarantees. If it speaks about how wonderful the United States is, if it defends Israel, or if it's critical of Islamist thought, then it's almost definitely going to be restricted. Beyond that, it is completely random. I mean, when Victor Davis Hanson, who was about as soft-spoken a professor as exists in the world today, gives a course in 5 minutes on the Korean War, it goes on the restricted list. I mean, folks, people need to understand the restricted list is supposed to be for pornography and violence. Alan Dershowitz gave illegal defense of Israel, and that was put up on the restricted list.
Dershowitz, that's what's so crazy. Dennis, I got to run. Thank you so much. Dennis Prager, you can follow him. You bet. DennisPrager.com, Prager University. I wanted to have him on today because this is really the approach of the book that I'm putting out. It's not a surrender. It's not anything. It's how do we fight this? We have to fight this in a different way. Prager University is a great example of that. It works. It works.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.